by just using it inappropriately and not using it properly and not taking care of the expenses, not taking care of the savings that have to be done for the future of the family or whatever. So we need to, I mean, before we get into, the important thing is that, of course, before you get into that relationship of husband and wife, we need to know each other before that.
Mm-hmm.
If a child has been, if a person has been pampered to that extent that he's not going to be manage his daily affairs, then you should be on the lookout. You should be careful in, before getting engaged with such a person.
Right.
So if he has become a person who is not a sane person in his behavior,
mm-hmm.
he's an imbecile and he can't make the proper decisions, then you shouldn't be going into that relationship with such a person. Of course, the problem comes when people are brought together in arranged marriages, and there we need to, things are not taken care of, in especially in households. And in families where there's an abundance of wealth and extravagance, rarely do children become accustomed to working hard. So we have family problems and divorces at, in those families much more than the other families maybe.
All right.
You hear about divorces taking place multiple times. So unfortunately, this pampering normally happens in wealthy households and families. But even then, it can happen in other
families as
families
well, because there
well.
Are some parents who would actually definitely literally kill themselves to fulfill the demands of
so
their children.
There should be introspection. I mean, there should maybe some problem with their own their upbringing. They had problems. They had, for example, they had felt empty about something. They felt the need to be pampered. Maybe they felt the need for love. They had a lack of love from their parents. They did not feel, they did not get what they wanted, the affection from their parents. Now they want to, you know, compensate for that with their own children. And the behavior that they had expected from their parents,
all right,
may now they were not getting it properly.
All right,
they now want to, you know, somehow
compensate it,
and say, look, I should not behave with my children in the way that maybe my parents behaved with me. Now that's problematic.
Exactly. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
This is Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Contact us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we are discussing about the problems of a pampered child. Over-pampering has always resulted into so many problems, like a child becoming irresponsible, or as an adult having unnecessary demands from different relations. Professor, we discussed what kind of problems he can develop within his family, what kind of problems this child when he grows up can develop when he is married, and now what are the problems when he has unnecessary demands from the society? Don't you think a pampered child also unnecessarily expects more from society?
Yes, of course. He becomes one of the things which happens is he becomes irritated very, very quickly. His demands need to be taken care of. He has to, you know, he expects
people
to. He
has been used to.
He becomes used to things that things should be done upon his demand. He should be.
And that too right away.
Right away. And that is not possible. I mean, when you even.
Maybe that someone can do that in your family, but not in the society. Yes, society is different.
True. So you need to realize the fact that when you come into the society, is not going to treat you as you were treated by your parents. Maybe the society will not take care of you as your parents did. So the parents, when they bring up their children, they should realize that we are training them for coming into society, for living and dealing with people in society. So they should be taught how to face hardships. I mean, pampering children, giving them the comforts of life is not a good thing all the time. Yes, you need to put them to tests. You need to put them to hard work. You need them to work at home. You need to make them work outside. I mean, as I said, even if you give them pocket money, they should labor for it. They should earn it. They should work for it. So pocket money or any other rewards that we are giving them, anything which we are offering them as gifts and prizes, there should be some conditions, terms to it, so they learn to live with those terms and conditions, and they learn to manage those things when they come into their lives, in the families they bring. They need to come up with themselves as parents,
as they grow up,
as families of their own, or the society at large, at the place of work.
Yeah.
Even when they're going to school and college, they can't bully people around. Many people who are over pampered, they become bullies.
Yeah.
And they bully people around, and they expect all of their peers to bow down to them and to expect them to become, you know.
And we have seen that ragging, those who are raggers in the colleges and the schools, these are especially from the wealthy families, and because their demands have always been fulfilled by their parents right away. So one of the things gets very clear over here, that fulfilling demand of a child is okay, but fulfilling that right away is also not correct.
Reasonable demands important, and giving them some space, allowing them to feel the fact that if they are being their demands are being accepted, they need to offer something in return.
Mm-hmm.
It should not be just one-way traffic. It should be both ways.
Both ways. All right. We'll discuss more on this after a short break. Dear listeners, stay tuned.
Imam Ali alayhi salam said, "Be like a friendly physician who applies medicine where it is useful."
Welcome back. You're listening to Islamic Upbringing. I'm Zainab with Professor Nakavi, and we are discussing problems of an over-pampered child. So one of the other problems that comes to my mind is that we should learn to say no to them and teach them to accept it. Because when a child is over-pampered, he does not accept no very easily from the society, especially, and from different relations other than his very immediate family.
Yes, exactly. We should learn to say no ourselves.
So it's our problem. We are not able to say no.
Yes.
And that's why we can't say no. He's not ready to listen to
me. That could be a general problem, not just in dealing with children, dealing with anyone. We have problems because we need to manage things which are more important in our lives also. We need to be able to say no to things which are lesser importance. But that is again one of the ways how things need it. We need to learn ourselves and then be able to say no to our children and make them learn to say no. And
teach them to say no.
Learn and teach them to say no and to be able to
accept being said
no to them also, both things.
Okay.
They should learn to say no to others where something is not important. Because in life you have things which are important and urgent. You need to take care of things.
But sometimes the same kids become victims just because they are not able to say no. Especially girls, I must say that, they become victims of many, many different things. Sometimes even bad things. Sometimes even being harassed just because they are not able to say a simple no. And although their entire soul is saying no, but just they are not able to express it verbally, how much they are themselves into the trouble just because of this one thing which is not taught to them properly.
So yes, exactly. Why is it a problem? We are not able to learn to say no. Sometimes we feel sympathy for someone. We can't make him feel offended by saying no. We feel that if we say no to him, he will
offended.
He will feel offended, or he will feel bad about it, or she will feel bad about it. And I don't want to make that person feel bad about me. But I must balance that. I want to see things.
So shall I actually make a scale that I have to always think, my Allah should not feel bad about it. I don't care about what the people.
Yes, exactly.
Feel.
What is important for me in life is that the most important thing is I should not be saying yes to things which Allah makes Allah offended. That is very important.
Okay.
And important.
Because there are some things when you say yes to someone and Allah says no to this, and you're saying yes just because the person does not get offended. What we have to teach our children to be careful of is that Allah should not be offended.
True, very true. But again, boils down to this fact that what is important for me is yes, and what is not important for me is no. What is important for me is something which makes me move towards Allah Almighty. Now, it may be something that I do for someone else. Here again, yes, I would say yes and not no, because I'm trying to help him out. Maybe taking care of something which he can't do, helping him to do something which he... Because one of the important things in life is to be able to take care of the needs of other people and to relieve them of their problems. But then we have to balance between what we want to achieve and what we can make others achieve and what is important to us. If it is important for us that we need to provide services to others, then say yes. But if it's going to stop me doing other responsibilities which are more important, especially to my own family, then I should say no.
All right. So what we learn over here is that saying no and accepting no from the society, both are extremely important, which are to be taught to our children at a very early age. The early you teach them, the more it's easy for you to deal with such children. Thank you so much, Professor, for coming. Thank you so much to your listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio. Until another session, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Do you know what Islam says? It says that life's the greatest test. It says that life's a borrowed space, returned upon rest.
Muhammad, the son of Abdullah.
Part 1.
Religions appeared one after another. All of them represented one God, one path, one origin, and one end to mankind. Every messenger who was appointed by God to convey his message informed the people of the advent of the last prophet of God. In this sense, Buddha and Krishna said the very same thing which Noah, Abraham, Moses, John, Zoroaster, and Jesus said. One told the name of the final prophet, and the other spoke of his origin. One forecast the signs of his homeland, while the other described the characteristics of his language. In one way or another, each prophet informed mankind of the joyous news of the advent of the final prophet, the last messenger of the heavens. In the very beginning of history, God sent Adam, his first prophet on earth, to propagate and show the heavenly path to the inhabitants of this world. Thousands of years have passed ever since, and some people continue to follow him by residing exclusively near the riverbanks of the world. Zoroastrianism is one of the most ancient religions of the world. These days, most of its followers are found in Iran, India, and some regions of Central Asia. They possess a heritage several thousand years old. Like the prophets before him, Zoroaster also informed his followers of the coming of divine prophets. The religious scripts of Zoroastrianism refer to these messengers as Sotients. There are three Sotients who were foretold to appear after the Zoroaster. Alternatively, three Sotients, three beneficent personalities, will come one after the other. Throughout history, the followers of Zoroaster have been waiting for their arrival. They have searched for them everywhere.
Attilo! What brings you here?
We are visitors from the east. We follow the star. The star of the prophecy.
The prophecy of the Messiah?
The Messiah!
So far, only three Zoroastrian sages have succeeded in seeing the first Sotient in Bethlehem. When the last prophet of God appeared in Hejaz, there were many Zoroastrians who saw the signs of the second Sotient in him. They joined him in large numbers and became his followers and helpers. However, there are still many Zoroastrians who are keenly waiting for the arrival of the third Sotient. They hope that this universal reformer will appear and make the world a utopia. In India, the land of many creeds, there are several mysterious religions spread out in the vast jungles and mountainous regions. You find religions such as Hinduism, Jainism, Buddhism, and Sikhism. Though in some case, the followers of these religions have become deviated from the right path. The depth of meaning and spirituality that these religions reveal is indicative of man's inherent tendency to establish a close relationship with an infallible creator and worship him. Historical roots of Hinduism are spread over thousands of years. Mysterious ascetics with wonderful conducts live all over India, in colorful shrines and dark temples in legendary jungles. They make the unspeakable things of this mysterious land even more mysterious.
God is one only. Even in India, in the Hindu philosophy, God is always one. But his manifestation is many.
This historical religion has several holy books as guidelines for its followers. These books are full of strange and unsaid mysteries. Among the sacred books of Hindus are the Puranas. These ancient books contain the history of the universe, the genealogy of kings and heroes, and the foretelling of future events. In these books, we again witness indications of the coming of a spiritual teacher called Muhammad, from a foreign land. To him is what Raja Bhuj respectfully says. I prostrate myself before you, O you, the pride of mankind, the inhabitant of Arabia. You have gathered a great power to eradicate Satan.
In one of the Puranas in India, Bhavishya Purana, it is also mentioned that Mahamud, Paigambar Muhammad, will be born in the Middle East and he would cleanse the people of corruption and bad habits there, and you know, he will bring a new wave of devotion. This is mentioned thousands of years ago in the Hindu texts, in a Purana. It's one verse is there, one quote is there, that such and such a person, a prediction was done about that.
He will appear in a sandy desert in the land of Arabia. He will be known as the pride of humanity, and his name is Muhammad. What could be the secret that has been also mentioned in the holy books of Hindus, and of which the Hindu monks have spoken? The history of Jainism goes back about 600 years before the appearance of Christ. According to Jainism, salvation can only be achieved through the practice of asceticism. The tenets of this faith dictate that God has 24 avatars on earth. The last one of them will be born in a peninsula, and the name of his father is Vishnu Bhagat, which is the equivalent of Abdullah. And the name of his mother is Somanib, which is the equivalent of Amina. He is said to be taught by Bhagwan in a cave. Sikhs, who wear a unique turban on their head, are followers of another religion in India. But are there any hints about the Holy Prophet of Islam and his religion in the scriptures of Sikhs? In addition to the promise made thousands of years ago by Eastern religions concerning the advent of a prophet called Muhammad in Arabia, Abrahamic religions also foretell the arrival of a great prophet on earth in the last age of humanity.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. Islam ID. Allah my Lord. His word Quran. Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Assalamu alaikum, this is IRIB English Radio and you're on to Youth Station. My name is Muhammad.
Oh, and my name is Muzaffar. Choo Choo Kachu is the Youth Station for you. You're wishing you had have said it now, aren't you?
Okay, so today we have something very beautiful to talk about, and that is a Jihad of Tabyeen or Jihad of Clarification. What is Jihad of Clarification, Brother Muzaffar? It's become a slogan now, yeah? It's like how we talk about freedom and liberty in the West. It's slogan, but you don't know what it is. So it was originally mentioned by the leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, and it's become a slogan, or rather a... I've seen many organizations formed under this name now.
Yeah, yeah. I'd say it's call to action.
It's a strategy now, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's a very great thing. So what it is?
It's an immediate and kind of an it's an emergency situation kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And what we need to do is clarify the truth, clarify all the realities for people. Look, before this, the terminology used by the leader was the soft war.
Yeah.
You know, and it got to a point where the leader himself had to actually say that, look, there are some people who deny that soft war is actually taking place. You know, he had to himself clarify that this phenomenon is real, as if people are totally unaware.
The you way know what that, really, I'm sorry to butt in, but you know what really bothers my mind is the word jihad. The word jihad. You see, the thing is, jihad, it has two meanings. First, the general meaning being the struggle. And we have the jihad al-akbar and asghar. Jihad al-akbar being the jihad of nafs, where you have to struggle against your own nafs. And the jihad al-asghar, the fighting in the battlefield. But this is a completely different way of looking at it. Jihad of tabiin. So is it really a struggle like in the battlefield?
Oh,
I don't know.
Of course it is. No, it is. You see, jihad al-tabi'in, when we're talking in any terms, in fact, but let's take it to the media terms, because in the media, we have to recognize that the media battlefield is an actual battlefield. It is really, really scary out there. You don't want to have your face seen. You don't want people to identify you. And at the same time, that's what the job oftentimes requires you to do.
Exactly.
You know, and the psychological attacks that you will encounter when you're doing the soft war, you can't even describe it to anyone unless they've been there themselves. It's one of those things that you really have to walk the path in order to understand what that is all about.
It's soft. Like you don't know it until you kind of, you know, get into it. Right?
Absolutely.
That's how it is.
It's a total battle. And I'd say that it encompasses both the greater jihad and the lesser jihad. Why? As we know, the greater jihad is to do with the nafs and the lesser jihad is to do with the physical battle. Like, for example, you'll have an internal enemy, which is your nafs, and the external enemy, which is the actual enemy on the battlefield, the physical thing.
The nafs being the more struggleful one. The more
it's the greater jihad, definitely, right?
So jihad al-tabi'in also deals with the nafs. Fantastic.
Of course.
Fascinating.
Because look, it's very easy to say, oh, I have taqwa. While you're sitting at home, you're enjoying your life, you know, and you're not really out there engaging. You're not engaging with the battle in the battlefield. You're
or
not debating.
Worse,
you're not.
Or even worse, it's easy for you to claim that you know something that's right without considering the facts, without doing your own research. So doing your own research can be a part of jihad al-tabi'in because it's dealing with jihad al-akbar, the greater jihad, your nafs. That aspect of jihad al-tabi'in with dealing with the nafs would be for you yourself to equip yourself with facts, with the truth.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a whirlpool, I'd say. You get sucked into the whirlpool.
Exactly.
And when you're fighting on the battlefield, like if in terms of the soft war, it would be fighting against those who are ideologically attacking Islam, right? So you're now attacking them back. If you look at the view counts, if you look at the comments, if you look at how well your videos are being shared and all the rest of it, it's inevitably going to have psychological impacts on you, right? Yeah. So that can either make a person very arrogant or it can make a person feel that it can crush their self-esteem. It's a constant battle between ups and downs, very, very highs and very, very low lows.
It's a very difficult test.
And that's what I mean by it encompassing the greater jihad as well. Because you are going to be fighting with yourself. I think we have to go for a break.
Yeah, sure. Why not? We'll be back soon.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Okay, so we are back with the Youth Station. We were talking about Jihad of Tabi'in, Jihad of Clarification, and we mentioned that there are two types of Jihad, the greater Jihad and lesser Jihad, and for the Jihad of Tabi'in, it's both ways. We have to deal with ourselves and also with the world outside of ourselves. One important thing we have to consider is how this Jihad of Tabi'in is being implemented at the moment. In most cases, what I see, because there are two positions in Jihad, in a war. There's a defensive position and there's an offensive position. What I see in most cases are we're almost so much into the defense position that we overlook the offensive position. We wait for the enemy to bring up a shubhe or a doubtful matter corrupt the youth's mind, and that's when we go and defend the youth.
Rather than
us trying to clarify and make sure things are right, taking precautionary measures before that person is destroyed.
That's true.
And it's very important for us to consider both the positions when we're dealing with Jihad al-Tabi'een. What's your take?
No, you're right. I mean, that's what it's been like from the beginning. We're always on the defensive. We are even now in 2023, is it now? We're still on the defensive. Nobody thinks, why are we not going out there and attacking feminism, for example? Why are we not attacking?
They have to come up with some doubtful matter for us to sit down and think about and say, oh, yeah, you're wrong.
So this time, this Charlie Hebdo character, he made a caricature of a cartoon of Imam Khomeini, and he was insulting our leader. And people are like, oh, no, we have to respond to this. Man, why do we not have our own cartoons that are mocking their idols?
Yeah.
Why are we not, you know, fighting back?
Picturizing the truth, what they have. That's it. That's what we want.
We don't have... Do you know what it is? Do you know
Charlie Hebdo can picturize the truth into full of falsehood, why can't we just show the truth, characterize the truth?
Yeah. But that's the thing. It has to be controversial. It has to be fun. It has to be something spicy. Otherwise, it won't sell. Who cares about the truth? Although, let me tell you this as well. The truth is controversial enough in today's era for it to sell and for it to be, you know, spicy in and of itself. La ilaha illallah was the original slogan of Islam. And that was really, really controversial at that time.
Exactly. Because leave all the 365 idols you have there, just stick to one.
Yeah, exactly. No, but it was actually challenging. They all knew this as well immediately, that this was actually challenging the power structure that existed, the system of authority that existed at that time. Mm-hmm. Because when you're saying there is no God except Allah, you're actually saying there is no authority except Allah. But I would like to go back to this point that this idea of the Jihad al-Tabi'een, which the leader is now advocating for, is not a new concept, okay? He's actually brought it back to our attention, as is the case with so many of these concepts, which our leader often brings to the surface and back to our attention. They are things which are part of the seerah of the Prophets and Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam. Mm-hmm. When the Holy Prophet was asked, what is the best form of jihad? There's so many forms of jihad, right? Studying is a type of jihad. Struggle. A wife obeying her husband is a type of jihad. Yeah. You know, and then there's jihad in the battlefield. There's jihad. There's greater jihad. There's lesser jihad. There's so many types of jihad. What's the best form? The Holy Prophet replied, "Kalimatul haqqin 'inda sultanin ja'ir." It is a word of truth in the face of a tyrannical dictator.
All beautiful, Brother Muzaffar. But then one other question.
Yep.
Very important, because we tend to surround ourselves with a lot of ideologies, with a lot of, you know, conceptual matters, but we don't know how exactly to implement those. Jihad al-Tabi'een, great, I understand. It's important, I understand. Urgent, I understand. How should I do it? How should I approach it? What is my responsibility when it comes to Jihad al-Tabi'een? How should I do this?
Everybody has to decide for themselves. It's not like the leader is going to come up to each, every individual and say, you know, you need to do this, you need to do that. The main concept here is to have an understanding and awareness that our religion is being attacked. Mm-hmm. Number one, and everybody, I believe, has that awareness to a lesser or greater extent. The second thing, and this is really, I feel, the missing ingredient, and that's ghayrat-e dini.
Yeah,
you need to
true.
Understand that this religion, you dear brothers and sisters out there who are listening, this religion is yours. It belongs to you. It's your possession.
It's for you.
It's your shield. This is the thing that Allah has appointed to protect you. This is your shelter. This is your home. This is your fortress, which is being attacked.
In the same way you defend your belongings, your family, and whatever you own when they're attacked, you should also do the same for the religion. We're back with the Youth Station. We're talking about Jihad al-Tabi'een. And Brother Muzaffar mentioned a very important point. That is the ghayrat al-Dini. Explain, brother.
So, yeah, we were talking about how, look, first of all, let's define the term, right? So when we're talking about ghayra or ghayra, We're talking about chivalry here. This sense, and chivalry, by the way, as they say in the West, it's dead.
Yeah.
This is not, and it, sometimes it's translated as positive jealousy. Ghayra, it is this sense of possessiveness over your own loved ones and belongings. It's this idea that, you know, if there is a woman sitting outside on the street, right, and you're in the train, for example, and there's no seat for her, she's pregnant, she doesn't belong to you, right? But your ghayra will not allow her to be standing while you're sitting,
yeah,
right? This is what Islam is promoting, this sense of chivalry, guys. Now, that sense of chivalry, that ghayra, needs to be for Islam as well. Mm-hmm. When you see that Islam is being attacked, why don't you take it personally?
Exactly. Just like, that's why we say one of the titles of Imam Ali is Ghayratullah, him being the Ghayrat of Allah, meaning that he would defend whatever is trying to annihilate the deen. He would stand up as a shield in front of that. That is completely true.
Now, from Westerners, unfortunately, this is a trend that I've seen. This ghayra has slowly been eradicated. And they say chivalry is dead in the West. You know, if you hold a door open for a woman in the West, you're actually afraid to do that because she might, you know, turn out to be a feminist and she'll suddenly attack you and she'll say, how dare you open the door for me? I can do it myself. I'm an independent woman. And you'll be like, oh my God, I wish I had never opened that door for you.
Yeah. You know? Even worse than that, like when it comes to families, that the fathers, they don't have any problem with their daughters going with anyone now these days, right? There is no sense of upholding that family structure, defending someone who might have ill intentions against your especially your daughters and your sisters and your mother. That is almost dead right now in the West.
Anyway, this is going too much about ghayra, but the point is that sense of chivalry is supposed to be about Islam.
Exactly. Okay?
When you see it being attacked, you're supposed to have this sense of, how dare you, I'm going to fight you back. Yeah. And over here, obviously, we're talking ideologically.
So there are different levels for that. So when you find, for example, yourself, when the deen is in like dire danger, then you take a different approach. Mm-hmm. Then when someone essentially just brings up a question or a doubtful matter in the deen, you take a different approach in that. And you mentioned, like when I asked you about the responsibility, you mentioned that you yourself, you have to have that ghayrat. I think before that, what about knowledge? Don't you think you should be equipped yourself with knowledge before you defend what you think you're defending?
Any soldier, before he goes into the battlefield, needs to have a basic understanding of how to use the weaponry at his disposal.
Exactly.
Right? And anybody who says otherwise, you show me a soldier who's ended up in the battlefield and not been killed because he hasn't been armed properly, right? Which soldier gets sent into the battlefield without a gun,
so
without
knowledge armor, will be that arm, yeah. Right? That's all the time we have for the youth station.
My point here is everybody already has that initial knowledge to go into the battlefield, right? And it's actually in the battlefield itself that soldiers pick up the most experience and learn the most.
I believe you in the warm grace of God Almighty. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Everyone has a beloved, a new dear friend. But I have you, my dear. May God protect you, my dear. May God protect you.
IRIB English Radio, for those who seek the truth.
Allah, 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 Allah.
این چیزی که انسان را مطمئن می کند ذکر خدا ذکر الله تطمئن القلوب.
Be aware, the hearts find rest in Allah's remembrance.
Spring of truth.
Allahu ya Allah.
The people of philosophy and reason should study the inherent secrets of this book, and through reference to the profound issues, they should reveal the divine philosophy and put it at the disposal of the right people. And the upright people should give us as a gift to those who are thirsty for this pond, Quran, a sip and drink from what the heart of the Holy Prophet received from Allah.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, dear audience. This is Sister Musavi. Well, in this program, what we do is to read some of the valuable speeches of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh and explain about their interpretations. We hope that in that way, we as lovers of this great character would come to a deeper understanding of Imam Khomeini's thoughts and ideologies. Well, in regard to the subject of the religion of Islam, Imam Khomeini holds that it is this power of Islam that has gathered together the various ethnic groups under one roof. The sentence of Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh is about racism, which is a controversial topic today. One of the main claims of Islam is that all of the people are equal in front of their Lord and no one should enjoy a higher status because of his or her race or family. The only thing that makes a person superior over others is his or her piety, and Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala condemns those who have a high opinion of themselves for their race and nationality. It is in the 13th verse of Surah Al-Hujurat, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala puts it in that way. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم يا أيها الناس إنا خلقناكم من ذكر وأنثى وجعلناكم شعوبا وقبائل لتعارفوا إن أكرمكم عند الله أتقاكم إن الله عليم خبير.
يا ربنا صلي على طه النبي وآله
صلى الله عليه
صلي
يا رسول الله
يا ربنا صلي على طه النبي وآله.
O mankind, indeed we created you from a male and a female and made you nations and tribes, and that you may identify yourselves with one another. Indeed, the noblest of you in the sight of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is the most good way among you. Indeed, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is all-knowing and all-aware. He can see that not only race, but also gender, tribe, and nations are not right criteria to give worth to a person. The only proper criteria is piety, and such movement was first started by Islam because from that time till present, most of the worth of a person was set by such elements. That is why Imam Khomeini rahmatullah alayh believes in this power of Islam. He mentioned this point over and over in his sermons and informed people that no matter what is their race and nationality, they should be united under the flag of Islam, and neither Arabs nor Persians nor Europeans are closer to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for their race. Well, that's the time we've got for today's episode. We talked about racism today, and let's recite the sentence of Imam Khomeini about the religion of Islam one more time. In that regard, he said, it is this power of Islam that has gathered together the various ethnic groups under one roof. Thank you very much for being with us today. May Allah protect you all.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Every night and every day, never forget to
لا إله إلا الله.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shimanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of physics. My dad, who taught me the art of writing.
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and warm greetings to you all. Welcome to another edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 12th, 2023. I'm Atefe Erfani, hosting this program today. As you may know, Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through your emails, your letters, and your messages from around the world. So please contact us and tell us what you think about our programs. Tell us what program or programs you like the best. And if you have any message for our great listeners around the world, you can record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard in this program. Please do remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and you just heard a nice piece of music from southern Iran. And here we've received reception reports from around the world, which I mention your names. Here we've received reception reports from Muhammad Brielle from Malaysia, one of our old and regular listeners. Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, one of our regular listeners, has sent us a reception report, and Jahangir Alam from Bangladesh. Also, one of our regular listeners has sent us reception reports. So, Konstantin, Jahangir, and Muhammad, thank you very much for sending us these reception reports. We want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And, of course, here we have many emails from around the world, which I mentioned some of your names here. And later during the program, I will read these great emails. From China, we've received an email from Wu Xianan. From India, we have an email from Anand Mohan, one of our regular listeners, of course. Najmuddin, again from India, has sent us an email. Robden Boer from the Netherlands, one of our regular listeners, has sent us an email. And Robens Fras Pedroso from Brazil has sent us an email. So stay with us, please. I will be back with you. Welcome back. Wu Xianan from China has sent us an email. Let's see what Wu Xianan says. I am a radio listener in Shenzhen, China. I hope you can issue me a radio listening certificate card, QSL, to prove my listening. I hope your station provides the listeners with a QSL card, the schedule flag, etc. First of all, salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Wu Xianan from China. And thank you very much for this email. As you might know, since sending any material, including paper QSL cards, schedule, or flags to our listeners is halted due to the pandemic, So please accept our electronic QSLS verification. And please refer to our website to find the frequency schedule. Anyway, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Wu Xianun from China. Thank you. Anand Mohan from India, one of our old and regular listeners, has sent us an email. Anand says, "Dear friends, please find the recorded program and reception report enclosed to this email for your verification. Your Sunday's Listeners Special is my favorite program. If I ever miss this program on shortwave, I make sure to tune in via internet. Salam and warm greetings to you, Anand Mohan from India. Please accept our gratitude to you for this great email. It's really good to hear that you are interested in Listeners Special program. Thank you for your great option. I mean, the Sunday program, Listeners Special. Please accept our electronic QSL, EQSL as verification. We wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. Anand Mohan from India. So after a short break, I will be back with you. Welcome back from India. We've received another email from Najmuddin, one of our old and regular listeners. Najmuddin says, "Dear staff, Assalamu alaikum. News and news highlights program is always my favorite. This week you had a special discussion in your radio about the prophethood of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, that I found it very informative. Kindly send me new program and frequency schedule, printed QSL card with IRIB souvenirs. Thank you." Salam and warm greetings to you, Najmuddin from India, and appreciations to you for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. So, you like the news section and news highlights program very much, and that's great. Thank you for letting us know what you think about our programs. So keep up the good work and write to us soon and tell us your views about our programs. And as you might know, sending any material, including IRIB souvenirs and paper QSL cards on behalf of IRIB English Radio to our listeners in the time of pandemic is halted temporarily, but after the pandemic, we will soon send you the souvenirs of IRIB English Radio, but in the time being, please accept our EQSL as verification. Anyway, thank you for this email, Najmuddin from India. From the Netherlands, we've received an email from Rob Den Boer. Rob says, "To the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran English service, it's my pleasure to confirm your broadcast, and I hope my report is correct. My name is Rob Den Boer, and I live in the Netherlands. Please listen to my audio recording attached, waiting for a reply from your site. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, the capital of the Islamic Republic of Iran. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, many thanks for this email and many thanks for the audio recording you sent to us. We are always by your side to reply to you, and we welcome any suggestion from you about our broadcast. Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, we wish you all the best, and we are looking forward to hearing from you very soon. And after a short break, I will be back with you. Thank you. Rubens Ferraz Pedroso from Brazil, as I said, has sent us an email. Rubens says, "Dear friends, I have had the pleasure of listening to your station during its transmissions few days ago in English. I am a shortwave listener from Brazil and I am 52 years old. I will be grateful if you send me a QSL verifying this reception report. That's to say, you please send a letter or a card where you include the specification that I have really heard your station, the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. Salam and warm greetings to you from Tehran, Rubens Ferraz Pedroso from Brazil. Warm appreciations to you for this email. We're so glad that the signals of IRIB English Radio are heard in every corner of the world, especially in your country, Brazil. Thank you very much for this email, and please accept our electronic QSL as verification to this email. Write to us soon and tell us your views about IRIB English Radio programs. We wish you all the best." It was great to be with you. But before ending this edition of Listeners Special, I do send my warm gratitudes and appreciations to those of our great listeners who have sent us reception reports as well as emails from around the world, including Konstantin Barsenko from Russia, Jahangir Alam from Bangladesh, Mohammad Riel from Malaysia, Wu Xianan from China, Anand Mohan from India, Najmuddin from India, Rob Den Boer from the Netherlands, and Rubens Ferraz Pedroso from Brazil. Many thanks for being with us. Please keep in touch with your favorite program, Listeners Special, and IRIB English Radio. We wish you all the best. Goodbye, and God bless you.
Dear listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We will be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send us emails to englishradio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at parstoday.ir/en. Our phone number is 0098-21-2201-3720. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran, by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan, Mudarris